they have traditional people on that reserve, it's turning. It's turning in favor of the non-status woman coming back on the reserve. But that still doesn't give them the right to assume that the children won't have that right to come back. It wasn't my fault they took me off the reserve. They took me off because it was the government that said they would do it. Anyway, I was going to ask you, do you think that more can be done to help the community? What else would you like to see in the future of the center?
There's always more that can be done to improve any community. Within the Native community, specifically, any individuals who have an area of interest, an area of concern, should and could assume responsibility to explore and develop that concept, bring it to maturity. If they need help in the process, that's what the staff at NAMRAND are here for. We are not here to do everything for people. We're not here to put on a baseball team. We're not here to run programs for anybody. We are here to help individuals develop their concepts, develop their ideas to a state where they're mature ideas and they're planning well enough that they can be implemented, with or without government funding. And to me, it's only individuals within any community that take responsibility, that take in the ownership concept, that a community begins to grow and thrive. You don't come up with an idea and go to a group and say, I have this really great idea and I want you to do it. I want you to plan it. I want you to organize the meetings. I want you to find the volunteers. That tells me that isn't such a great idea if you don't want to assume any type of ownership for that idea. If you don't want to put a little bit of work into it, that tells me that isn't a very good idea, that you're not really convinced it's going to work because you're not putting any dedication into it, you're not putting any time into it, you're not exerting your energy on it. So how good is the idea if you're not willing to do it yourself? When I see someone helping themselves, I will go out and do whatever I can to assist them. I will not take over the idea and develop it, because then it becomes my idea. Ideas, concepts, projects, programs need to be developed at the grassroots level, from one community member, two community members, three community members that are gaining support by word of mouth within, from and with other community members within a group. For instance, here in the Native community, if I have an idea, you know, I got in touch with Carolyn, I got in touch with Ken, got in touch with Dorothy Kennedy, different people that I had come in contact with. And eventually, it became community-based, because these are community members living in this community who have accepted the ownership role of the Ojibwe language program here at the NAMRAND Center. The NAMRAND Friendship Center takes no credit at all for it. It's these individuals who have taken time out of their life, who have taken time away from their families, and have seen the need to share themselves and their skills with other Native people here in London, devoted their time, committed their time, dedicated their time for hours on end in the evenings and for weeks on end and for months on end, to bring about a mature program, which is the Ojibwe Language Committee, the Ojibwe Language Classes. And it's done very well. This is the best it's ever done in the history of NAMRAND. And it only goes to speak of highly dedicated individuals. And so to me, my idea of community development is not putting on bingos, is not putting on powwows, is not putting on different events. It's helping people to develop themselves, to develop their own skills and abilities, to become what they want to become, or to develop their ideas into programs or projects that are, from the grassroots level, have been identified by the community, which is community-based, have Native content in it, which is Native-specific. It's specific to the Native people in this area, is controlled by Native people from the Native community, and it has a determination about it that comes from those Native people involved. That is the value system that we share. And it's how Indian self-government is going to be achieved.
As for yourself, do you feel you have accomplished what you strive for?
Yes. I have a very good feeling of contentment. I have a good feeling about success. I have a good feeling about progress. If I didn't, I'd quit. But I see the results of what I do here. I see a functioning and effective Ojibwe Language Committee. I see adequate funding coming in for that program. I see classes that will be starting again in the fall. I see a race relations committee that's going to be starting in the fall, that's going to be holding a series of 7 workshops that will be based around Native culture. I'm not the chairperson. There's been a person identified from our Native community who has never been a chairperson before but has accepted the challenge of taking this up. I'll be there as a resource person. We have a number of individuals from the Arab community, the Greek community, the Black community, and the Portuguese community that also will be on this committee. We have more Native people that haven't been to the center before taking an active part in it. And I can say that this is all because I went out and individually contacted these people and convinced them and talked to them and expressed a mutual interest and a mutual concern around the race relations issue. And I see that working as a community-based project. I'm not running it. NAMRIN's not running it. But we're acting as resource people to it. The Powwow Committee, I was the chairperson of it. I'm not the chairperson anymore. I resigned. We have someone from the community that's the chairperson now. We have someone from the community who's a secretary, who's a treasurer. We have a little fundraising group. These are not projects that I do myself. I will help to initiate them, but I will not do the work. I am here to help facilitate the process of community development. And as individuals begin to grow and accept responsibility, then you see community development. Because then you see special projects from community members that have good ideas. They look for funding, and all of a sudden it becomes a program that's accessible to all community members, Native and non-Native. You have special programs that are developed. One of the endeavors, I think, of the Ojibwe Language Committee is to come up with curriculum material for junior level children in city schools. Right now, there's one school that I know of in southwestern Ontario that has an effective language program for kids in the junior levels, and that's the Forest Central School. And that was developed by Verna Shaw-Kentz. So I think that's an endeavor that deserves a lot of credit to the Ojibwe Language Committee of London. And I can sit back and say that there are a number of functioning committees. We're starting an elders group in the fall. And that's going to be inviting different elders from southwestern Ontario for, it's going to be open to community members to come and consult with an elder, to have that exchange of wisdom and knowledge that we believe has been entrusted to our elders. And that's a program that's not going to be ran by me, but yet it's an idea that I have. It's an idea that a lot of other community members have had. And now they're taking the ownership idea, and they're going to actually do it. And again, I'm the resource person to help that. But you always need a facilitator, a coordinator, a resource person to make these things happen. Because people who have never dealt in an organization or worked within groups or a committee or a board don't feel they have the necessary skills and abilities to function. They at the time may not have the necessary resources available to them. And that's the learning process. When they come to NAMRIN, we'll help them in every way possible. We'll identify the sources for you. We'll walk with you that path for 3 to 6 months. But after that, you're on your own. Within that time frame, I should have given you enough skills, enough knowledge, enough resources that you can function on your own, independent of us. And that's been accomplished here. That has been accomplished here in a lot of different groups and committees that have been established. And to me, that's success.
What do you hear from the community as being, particularly since you're serving primarily urban native people.
Yes.
As their cultural needs, what are the areas, if you were to prioritize what it was they most feel a need to connect with, to either to maintain, or in some cases maybe even revive, in terms of parts of their cultural life? And you've mentioned that language is a clear
language has to be the strongest need that has been identified from a community for NAMRIN to sponsor. I would say language is number one. Number two would probably be housing. Housing may not mean just for the necessity of having a roof over their head, but I think we're looking for a little more closer-knit community. I think we want to keep track of where everybody lives that's native. Eventually, we want to start a native welcome wagon. So we have to know where people live when they come into the city. But I would say housing is another one, because it's not adequate housing. A lot of native people have 4, 5, 6, 7 kids. It's hard to find an apartment, 2-bedroom apartment, where you pay $600. And so there's a need for a liaison group to act on behalf of individuals who really don't know the resources in a city if they've just moved here. And sometimes coming from a reserve, the cultural gap that exists, they may not find it the easiest to communicate with non-native people. Housing, I'd say, is number two. Number three would probably be, I wouldn't like to prioritize it. I can just give you general ideas what I think. I think there's a need for a youth group, a native youth group. Has been attempted at the University of Western Ontario with the Native Association. Students there at Fanshawe College Native Association. The high schools, we have a number of students that are from some of the high schools here that are interested in getting a Native Council together. And so in each of these three educational institutions, we're seeing the same need being addressed, a need to be together, a need to plan together, a need to stay together. And I think that same need is identified in housing. To be together, to reinforce that family support system that's lost when you move to a reserve. I think there's a need for consultation from young people to elders. I think the youth, native youth, are looking to elders to help them. We don't have that many native elders in a city that can advise or consult with our younger people, or our young families, our young married couples. Maybe our single mothers. We don't have that opportunity available to us as much as we would like. Whereas in Northern Ontario, they're all over the place. But here in Southwestern Ontario, it's a very dry, culturally part of the province. And I think as there's a movement amongst young people, at least to move toward returning to educating ourselves about our cultural heritage, learning from our elders, there has been identified in our community a need to start an elders group where we have an elder available to anyone from the Native community to come in consultation with for at least 2 days a month. And that's very small, but at least it's the beginning.
You mentioned before the Christianizing influence is certainly taking a great deal away in schools.
Well, in Southwestern Ontario, I think you'll find it predominantly United, Anglican, and Presbyterian. In the North, it's predominantly Roman Catholic. On almost on every reserve, I think you'll find a Catholic church. Mm-hmm. When I start meeting my friends in Toronto from Northern Ontario, I just assumed that they were Presbyterian or possibly Pentecostal. And then when I found out that they're Catholic, I thought, Catholic? How in the world did you get to be Catholic? Oh, because that's the church on our reserve. It is. And as I start traveling throughout Ontario, I found there's quite a few Catholic churches up there. And I don't know why. I guess some of the missionaries just seem to float this way, and they seem to do a very good job of converting people. Mm-hmm. And I think our cultural heritage is still here. It's just not as evident and as strong in southwestern Ontario as it is in northern Ontario. And I don't think there's an emphasized need for powwows, an emphasized need for cultural gatherings in southwestern Ontario as there may be in northern Ontario. I think our elders in this area are very quiet. I think that they don't shout from the housetop what they know or the changes they want to see. I think it's there. If one wants to go and consult on an individual basis, I think they'll find them here. But it's just not well known. But I believe that we have strong cultural ties in this community, in our communities here, or our communities wouldn't have existed as long as they have. And being as economically independent and as successful as our communities are in southwestern Ontario, we are known across Ontario as being the most successful group of reserves in Ontario, the 7 reserves surrounding this area.
What do you see as the response of the non-Native community to the efforts for cultural preservation, for further establishing Native identity, whatever it is that is very Native-centered and Native-determined? What do you see as the non-Native community's response, particularly institutions like...
The non-Native community?
Yeah, particularly institutions like the school systems and the city government.
I think London is a very prejudiced town towards any minority group. I think London is very white. I think London is very narrow-minded to cultural groups within a city. You have over 35 minority groups in the city. And I think the response in schools towards blacks, the response in schools towards natives, towards Arabs, towards Jewish people, towards the Greeks, is a very prejudiced attitudes in the kids. And I can say this because meeting with representatives from these different minority groups and listening to the problems that their kids go through at school, where would children in the world learn a stereotype or learn a prejudiced attitude? They just don't dream it up themselves. They just don't look at you one day and say, oh, you're black, and start calling you names. Somewhere it's learned, maybe through the parents, maybe in the home. But you know, for everything learned, you can unlearn it. And I think if there's a prejudiced attitude, parents would pick it up and deal with it. But I don't think in the schools, the kids just don't seem to have an appreciation for other cultural groups. And we held for the first time in the history of NAMRAND in the city powwow this past March 21st and 22nd. We may have had a maximum of 600 white people come, non-Native people come to our powwow. Out of what is the population here? Over 275,000. We had maybe 600 people come to our powwow. We had one little non-Native boy stand outside the door and say, Mommy, I want to go in there. The mother looked at him and said, no, that's only for Indians. We're not going in there. Come on, let's go. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure thousands in the city share the same attitude. I think the city's very ignorant as to what Native people are all about. I was a guest speaker at William Proudfoot House. I spoke to a group of 12 women. So what is your impression of Native people? Give me, when I say Indian, when I say Native person, tell me what some of the things that comes to your mind. Here's where the response is. Tomahawks, feathers, headhunters, scalpers, teepees, poor, depressed, alcohol, sadness. I said, oh, really? said, oh, really? That told me a lot. These women were from different places throughout Ontario, and I thought, my God, there's women in this group that are almost 40 years old and coming out with an attitude and an impression like that after 40 years of living on this earth, after living in this area. Ontario is one of the highest populated provinces. It is the highest populated province in Canada for Native people. And that's her image of Indian people, is tomahawks and feathers. I was sad. I was very sad to learn that there's probably hundreds of other people just like her that have not taken the time to do a little bit of research, to ask a few questions, and to really learn what Native people are really searching for.
One interesting part, when I told women that this was something that I really wanted to do when I wanted to work on this project, one was that it must be a courageous thing, and I thought, well, why? I couldn't understand that, as if I'm going off into some dangerous world or something. That was one response. But the other, which I found to be very real and something worth listening to, was a concern about boundaries that, as a non-Native person, and you and I talked about this at the interview too, was as a non-Native person going into Native communities and on Native turf, are you intruding? Mm-hmm. And there was a real sense of holding back by non-Native people so as not to intrude, so as not to seem to be viewing Native people as some kind of spectacle or specimen or, you know, in some kind of an object way, but wanting some kind of actual contact and really no idea
mm-hmm.
how to make contact.
Mm-hmm.
That was really clear. It was different from the other kind of response, which has all the stereotypes. The other had to do with, am I being disrespectful? Am I being intrusive if I move forward? And part of that has to do with very different styles of expression that many Native people have
mm-hmm.
that can be quieter, that can be more observant. And the non-Native people who are pretty yappy and pretty sometimes can come on like gangbusters, except with the exception of some people I know who don't fit that. But anyway, that sense of two styles of communication.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that I have seen that as a need for the non-Native community to be more educated about some of our history, some of the reasons why we're entitled to the certain privileges that we enjoy in Canada, to give people an appreciation and an understanding of the unique value system that Native people have. In seeing so many ignorant people within the City of London and dealing with them, including City Hall, I can honestly say that
they have my
empathy. And here at NAMRAND, we're going to do something about it. We are starting a program that is a sensitization workshops for schools, for the police force, for housing authorities, for municipal employees, for every branch of government, for every branch of service that possibly reaches or communicates with Native people. We expect these people to participate in our workshops. We'll also be approaching King's College to see if we can put it through their college.
Althaus and Teachers College, because one of the things that happens is that these kids are coming out of Teachers College, and it's very different. Althaus is, they train the high school teachers, is that they come out of there with absolutely no sense of different cultural groups,
yep.
And yet the bulk of the work of a teacher has to do with social-emotional stuff,
mm-hmm.
behavior management, social expectations, which you come in with. If you go solely on your own social expectations when you've got a crowd of very different kinds,